Hey, I'm Adam Carolla.
I'm Dr. Drew.
And we are here to ask you to do us a little favor. If you like what you hear, share it with a friend.
Nice. Keep the pirate ship afloat, right?
Yeah, well, that's the only advertising we got. But it's the best kind.
It is.
Word of mouth.
It is.
Whose mouth?
Yours. Not yours, theirs.
Theirs.
Theirs, yes.
That's right. Thank you in advance for telling a friend, and enjoy the show.
This is Carolla Digital. Recorded live at Carolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. Did it right? Well done, gentlemen. Of course, the Adam and Drew Show. Mr. Carolla. Mr. Carolla is if it were me doing what he's doing these days, people would call me a workaholic and shun me. Adam is at a fevered pitch, and he's going to be a couple minutes late, so he asked me to begin the program, and so fine, we'll begin the program. He'll be in here in just a second. Gives me the chance to remind you of a couple things. Get Adam's new book, President Me, pre-order at Amazon.com. It says pre-order the link at AdamCarolla.com. Can you also click through Amazon at DrDrew.com?
Absolutely, okay, or good. Adam and DrDrewShow.com.
Okay, perfect. That sounds better to me. And don't forget, at all three of those websites, please do your shopping through the Amazon link, particularly at DrDrew.com if you can. We need wind in the sails, if you know what I mean, to keep me afloat here at the Carolla Network. Adam's got live shows coming up in Buffalo this Saturday, 8 p.m., Irvine Improv, February 13th. Las Vegas Treasure Island, February 21st. And the Treasure Island was originally supposed to be me and Adam. Magically, I got muscled out of that one. But Mangria events.
But please come out and see Adam and Joe Coy.
Oh, is Joe Coy with him?
Yep. Adam Carolla Show with special guest Joe Coy.
Fantastic. We'll talk about that. Detroit Motor City tonight. Motor City Casino, 8 p.m. Royal Oak, Michigan. Lincoln Park, Amherst, New York. These are Mangria events. Check it out, AdamCarolla.com, for the sites and places and times. Volume 1 of the Adam and Drew Reunion Tour, highlights from the first three shows, Bakersfield, Santa Barbara, Denver. Chris Maxipat is smiling at me because he knows what comes next out of my mouth is where the fuck is Volume 2, which are, by the way, the events we'd really honed our skill, and they're very funny. So I think it'd be interesting to get those up. But it also reminds me that if you go to DrDrew.com, you've got the Volume 2 of the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew podcast. Play the groovy music behind me while I'm doing the Stamps.com read. If you haven't heard yet, postage rates have changed again, which means longer lines at the post office. But with Stamps.com, at your own computer, they alert you to the rate changes, and you print the stamps up on your own, and you get them for free with our risk, no risk trial, $110 bonus offer, which gives you that digital scale. So you can see what these groovy tunes. These are groovy tunes. The digital scale, so you can weigh your package or letter and get the exact postage amount and print right up on your printer right there in your office or home. And $55 of free postage. It's like saying, it's like to me, I know I marvel at this every week, but it's like saying $55 print up on your computer. It just happens to be in the form of stamps that you put on your letters, which everyone uses across relatively, you'd be surprised of how much you're using stamps. Go to stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in ADS, that is stamps.com. Promo code ADS for that $110 bonus offer only at stamps.com. So that groovy music in the background is, in fact, give it another taste. Give us some of the upbeat stuff. Do you have any calls or anything to go out to while waiting for Mr. Carolla? There we go.
Still coming in.
All right. Let's just keep it going until he gets here. Still coming to calls. All right. What can we talk about here today? I have a huge lecture coming up at UCLA in March, and it's freaking me the F out. It's about attachment. And if you know what – do you guys know what attachment is? No. God, those blank stares. Attachment is sort of the cornerstone of the human experience. It's like, you know, attaching to mom, like bonding. But it turns out it's a much more elaborate process through which really the self develops and our sense of – our ability to regulate our emotions. The emotions are not just free-form things that happen. They are things that sort of we get in touch with through experiences with other people. I'm actually beginning to believe that consciousness itself is something that develops in the context of an interpersonal relationship. That if we were all raised like feral children, if we were raised out in the woods, I don't think we would have consciousness like we have consciousness today. And in fact, I believe that I'm beginning to believe, it's not the right word, I'm beginning to formulate an impression that, you know, when people talk about you know, when people have mediums and psychics and stuff and are reading, you know, things. I believe those are parts of other people that are in the consciousness of the other person, that the consciousness is a shared experience. So we carry pieces of important relations around with us, and some people kind of pick up on that. I think that's what that is. So anyway, this, if you go to doctor.com, there's a guy named Alan Shore and Stephen Porges and Dan Siegel. These are all sort of giants in the Shore is the episode I want you to look for me, Gary. These are giants in the field of attachment and emotional, what's called interpersonal neurobiology, affect regulation. And Dr. Shore kindly came on that podcast. And if you want to get a little primer on how that all works, that the Shore one and the episode
65
is Alan Shore. And how about Siegel, Dan Siegel? Between those two.
104.
You get a little primer at Doctor.com, the Dr. Drew podcast, on attachment and stuff. Anyway, Shore, after he finished the podcast here, asked me to speak at the conference this year, which is honoring him, which freaked me. I could not say no. This guy to me is like – it's like Jesus going, would you mind coming to dinner tomorrow? I'd be like, yeah, be there. And it's honoring him. And I was telling Dr. Siegel, who I had lunch with yesterday, who you hear on the episode 104, that I heard the very, very first conference that they put on with these people 20 years ago. And I still have the cassette tapes from that conference. I've listened to them like listening to
– What's a cassette?
Yeah, I know, right? That's how old these things are. I had to fill out an application and send away to get cassettes sent to me to get these lectures, and they were so informing is not a strong enough word. They informed my understanding of what I needed to do to treat drug addicts, what I needed to do in my own therapy, the human experience. It became just a formative experience listening to these lectures. So I literally could write them down. I've got them like memorized, like as though I was listening to some prophet, and now I'm going to go write his lectures down later. It's really, yeah, it's messed up. So now I'm going to bring the tapes with me to the lecture and go, these are the actual cassettes of the first conference 20 years ago. I've got to be the only person on earth that have those. What?
I was just wondering where and when your conference is.
Hmm. I have to look it up. It's in March at UCLA. I don't know exactly where, but I mean it's like Cheryl Arrett, who, again, if you want to give me an episode number there, she's a fine therapist who's very, very deep in these attachment mechanisms. People like her will be at this conference. I'm not sure the average person is going to want to go to 3 days of interpersonal neurobiology lectures. Anyway, for me,
68
episode, Cheryl, 68. Mostly, is that the one with Lynette, or is that the one just she and I?
That's the one with Lynette, and then the one with just you and her is an All About Women.
Oh, okay. Okay. So mostly in that one with Lynette and Cheryl, we're complaining about Adam and his need for attachment and empathy, just saying. Wonder how the therapy's going. He went to Dr. Arrett eventually. Does he ever talk about that?
He talked about it right when he started going. Haven't really heard much since.
Clearly, judging by his lack of affect regulation lately, I would just judge him to be not going. That'd be my guess. Everybody agree?
We got a call coming in.
All right, you want to do it? What's the call number?
Line 3, Adam, 24 from Austin.
All right, Adam, what's going on?
How much, Drew? I'm sitting here with my girlfriend, Caroline.
Yep.
Hello. Hey, Caroline.
We've been talking recently about moving in together. We've been dating for a little over a year.
How old are you guys?
And I'm 25, she's 24.
You're how old?
I'm 25,
uh-huh.
She's 24.
Okay.
And we've been talking about moving in, and actually today we were thinking about going to talk to somebody, and I saw that you guys were looking for calls, figured that you might be the best person to talk to.
All right. There's lots of debate about whether moving in beforehand is a good idea or a bad idea before a marriage. I'm actually a fan, so I would generally say fine. But the only problem – I would say is that a lot of people enter into cohabitation with sort of not any specific goals in mind. It's just sort of that's the next place our relationships go, and we're not really ready to get married yet. So we kind of move in together because we love each other. And we can't, you know, we spend all the time together anyway. So what the hell?
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of that so much. I think rather you need to be like, hey, this is moving us towards marriage. And if we're not engaged after a year or 18 months or 24 months or whatever's right for you guys, maybe we ought to like be very clear that we're not going to keep this going on indefinitely. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that
absolutely.
Carolyn, is that okay with you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great. The thing is that we both really want to move in together, and we've talked about marriage, and you know, it's just not something that we're ready for right now.
Yeah, it's good.
But I still think you have to
put it on a clock. You have to like make it sort of part of the process of getting towards. And if you're not engaged at least at the end of whatever the time interval is you guys determine is right for you, that's telling you something. And that maybe you ought to like really – but just keep it as part of the – it's not just, hey, it's just we love each other. We can't imagine spending your time apart. We're cohabitating. We're cohabitating as part of moving us forward. Okay?
Yeah.
And that's what I mean, because my sister and her boyfriend – they've been together for about 7 years, and she really wants to marry him, but they've been living together for like 4 years.
Yeah.
And it's like he doesn't really have any plans to do that.
Right. So
like,
that's the question. Should they live together? And I said, look, if you live, fine, live together, but have it like time limited. Like if you're not engaged after a year, 24 months, it means something, you know? Like this is part of us.
Yeah.
I think living together is healthy when you're like, it's a part of moving the relationship forward. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You know, this is Adam speaking.
Who?
Adam.
Oh. Adam, what the hell do you?
I'm 49.
Where are you
from? I'm from North Hollywood by way of Cherry Hill, New Jersey. I like when people crack themselves up over nothing halfway into whatever they're saying that's not that funny. It usually comes with, I call myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, my sign is Pisces, but I call myself a chocoholic. All right. And by the way,
what are your thoughts?
Well, I have different thoughts. I have my thoughts have probably evolved or changed or devolved over the years. I don't know that I'm a huge fan of living with one another. I think if I now, here's the problem. I think all the times I've lived with someone, it's been out of necessity.
Oh yeah.
And if you think about many times,
I just got a death stare over here.
Let him finish. You heard my point. If you can go with that,
what Jay has under the box. living together because of necessity adds a wrinkle to it. And I'm trying to think of all the cases I know of, including myself in my past, where she had a really nice single family home she was living in happily.
Yeah.
I had a really cool spread a few miles away, and we're both happily living in our multi-bathroom homes, and then decided it'd be a good idea to move in together.
In a shitty apartment.
In a shitty apartment, we were on top of each other. A lot of it, for me, was always economics. Have a dude roommate or you could have a chick roommate.
Just think of human history. Why do humans live together? It's sort of a necessity.
You milk the cows and I'll go hunt and all that kind of stuff. So you have this sort of necessity thing.
Yeah.
But then oftentimes it means you're living in a smallish apartment. You're kind of on top of each other. There's a lot of space invasion. There's a lot of, especially you're also doing it at an age. These guys are 24, I guess.
Yeah, 24 to
25. You know, it's not a great age to be living on top of somebody. I mean, no age is.
Meaning you might sabotage the relationship by living together?
I just mean I don't think I was emotionally prepared to live with somebody else, having that kind of relationship with when I was in my younger 20s.
And I think that's what some people would argue, that you're taking the romance out of the relationship or the mystery. I'm more pragmatic. I'm like, no, you're learning what it's like to really be together, and it's a trial thing.
I mean, look, I think I would say, certainly, an adult professional couple who met online who was dating probably wouldn't move in with one another until they were ready to really make a commitment, get engaged or married. And the reason is they both have their own homes and lives and cars and things like that. So if you take it, like if you said, well, a couple professionals met online in their 30s or early 40s, and they would probably live apart until it was time to get married.
I agree. However, you could argue that they might be in a hurry to, like, hey, I'm lonely. Let's get this going.
Look, the bottom line is,
you're grown ups.
Nobody's going to give you a recipe for marital success or even relationship success. Many will try. Many books have been written. Many words have been spoken. But the reality is, there's you and there's Caroline, and you guys will live together, and you'll either make it work or you won't make it work. I don't know about I do agree with Drew. Whatever it is you do, whether it's, you know, the guy who goes to college to find himself and never declares a major and 7 years on is sort of wandering around the snack shack trying to get laid.
Yeah.
Or the person that just takes a job, doesn't really much care for it, but it's just kind of a holding pattern. You probably should have a plan.
Move forward. Yeah. A structure.
I don't say circle a date on the calendar, but I would say, you know, hey, when I graduate whatever school and you get your degree in, or both of us find a job, next step, maybe start looking for a bigger, nicer place. And the next step, start looking toward the marriage.
All right. So we're kind of what, Adam?
Yes.
Sorry, if I could go ahead and just add something real quick. First, I got to stroke Corolla's ego.
We did actually
meet online. Mm. So he was sort of right about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're both at a place where we're not 100% financially where we'd like to be.
You're never going to be there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that's the reason I think why we want to move in together, obviously, financially. But that's another reason we both talked about.
Adam, we're giving it our blessing. Don't talk so much. Yeah. We're giving it a blessing. It's all right.
Don't get up in your head.
It's all good. Just know that she, particularly your young lady, she told me the story about her, was it her sister or sister-in-law, whatever. She doesn't want to get caught in that limbo. Don't do that. That's all I'm saying. This is the beauty of the fucking internet. Look what's on the call board.
Hungary?
There. Hungary, the country of Hungary is calling.
Now line four, Jesus. Jake.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Where are you exactly?
I'm in a city called Corolla is not a big fan of the super ethnic pronunciations by Americans. So it's called Gyor.
Gyor.
It's in eastern Hungary. I'm working for an American engineering firm doing pretty much cell phone towers.
Do you speak Hungarian?
Bits and pieces. I'm mostly just working with other Americans and Hungarians who speak English. So.
Correct me if I've observed something about Hungarians. Every time I have a patient, Adam, that has a bona fide photographic memory, like literally you go, what's on page 27, paragraph 2? And they'll just start reading it from memory. Hungarian. All right. So are you noticing people are super duper smart in Hungary?
The people I work with, yeah, I mean, they're all, you know, telecom guys, so they're all, you know, they've all been educated pretty well.
But crazy smart stuff, like crazy smart.
Well, somebody, obviously my grandfather is Hungarian, everybody else in my family, you know, my father's Italian, but you wouldn't know it if you spoke to him or observed him over a 10-year period, hopefully in captivity. It's like literally my father never said, well, you know, I'm Italian, so I understand I'm passionate about, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's in my veins, you know, well, every night, big pasta, you know, asabuco every night, you know, no. So, and my mom didn't like her heritage just because she didn't like her mom.
Do you know what it was?
No, just plain.
Interesting. Plain, my heritage is plain.
Well, it would have been, well, you know how they have generic drugs and generic soda and beer and stuff. Hers would have just been plain rap at the store. Whatever the
you go to ancestry.com, look for the plain category.
Well, you know, there's Coke and then there's RC and then there's Shasta and then there's just the one that says soda.
But is plain different? Cola. If you're logging on to ancestry.com from Mozambique, is it different? Plain is different there?
I don't know. My mom would have been like English and Welsh or something, and it's just kind of white.
Yeah.
And it was always funny because my grandmother claimed to be a daughter of the American Revolution or something. Something. Their folks go way back. Their side, they're poor and stuff, but they go way back. They didn't just come over here kind of thing. Everyone else just kind of in my family, or we didn't have much family, but everyone else sort of came over here.
Yeah.
They were here. But they don't know what they are. So, look, my mom doesn't know her dad.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was.
Yeah.
He's not spoken of. But it was always funny because my mother, her mother, Helen, claimed to be, you know, daughter of the American Revolution. I guess it's a group. Or
the DAR from the beginning, like in the 18th century?
If you can prove that you have heritage that goes back to. But my mom always disputed it,
which is
always funny. Like, you don't want to just give your mom, like, she's making this claim that no one gives a shit about, no one ever checks up on.
And by the way, she's 93 when she's saying this.
she started in her 80s saying this, you know, but my mom would always be like, I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
Which, again, is just being super passive aggressive because it's like no one's going down to the Library of Congress and checking up on it at a cocktail party. You know what I mean? Just let them have it.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like somebody says, I'm a descendant. I actually have some blood with Houdini. You know, I mean, we're not brothers, but my aunt's cousin was married to his, you know, or something like that. Why just argue with them?
Right.
You know, but my mom would because she hated her mom.
Of course.
Anyway, made for a great environment. My grandfather, Hungarian, step-grandfather, never stopped telling stories, never stopped making jokes, never stopped wordsmithing, never stopped taking words and trying to match them. In his very last years, he was 92 years old. His eyesight was basically shot. He lost his eyesight, not to the point where he was blind, but he lost his eyesight, you know, when he was like 70. So he had basically 20 years of not really being able to see. And his favorite thing to do would be like read you know. So big magnifying glasses, you know, they didn't have sort of contraptions with arms and lights around them, and you'd have to hold them up to the thing. And, you know, this didn't have surgeries or glasses, the big, thick, fat glasses and stuff like that. It wasn't that long ago, but it may as well have been Abe Lincoln or something, you know. Just and they'd have people, you know, his wife would have to read stuff to him. But he used to combine things. His big thing was Jewish food and Mexican food. Because he lived in his own mind because he couldn't really see very well and he couldn't get around.
Chorizo blintz.
Yeah.
What?
Better than that, though. No, so I would show up at his house and he'd be sitting there and he'd come up to me and he'd go, enchilatka. And I'd be like,
But that's just for the words, or we'd actually want to
product? No. He was wordsmithing. It was like trying to be clever. He wanted to be clever. It was always clever.
Yeah.
And he was keeping his mind sort of busy. His eyes were shot and everything else was going. He was sort of keeping his mind going.
Give me another good one.
And he would tell me, I had five of them. That's the only one I remember. And so he would tell us stories every night. And every night we slept over, he would come in before we went to bed and he would tell us stories.
I've never heard this.
He would weave these stories.
Like what? Well, like
oh, there was the boy with one arm and he'd go through the village, you know, and blah, 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 blah. And then he'd end, you know, and then, you know, we'd end. It was serial. And he'd weave these stories.
How long would they last?
Oh, you know, it'd probably be 15, 20 minutes. We'd start getting sleepy.
He'd do 20 minutes of a story off the top of your head.
Oh, he could scat, you know. And plus, we were nine. You know,
no,
didn't
but
have
still,
to be that
I, my daughter used to make me do that, too, and I found it hard.
Well,
it
you're difficult. Used to reading textbooks and stuff, but he would scat these stories, tell these stories, and always stories and jokes and tidbits and stuff and how clever people were and stuff like that. And then
what are you doing with your grandmother?
Making her fucking dinner is what he was making. Then at some point, I think after he died, somebody showed me a study that said that Hungarians were the most, communicative or storytelling.
One of the most difficult languages. And so
language was big to him, and storytelling was big to him. And I think Hungarians. And the other thing, too, is he came here with a whole wave of Hungarian writers.
Yeah.
Who wrote in Hollywood.
Huh.
They couldn't speak good English, but they all took care of each other. There are guys like Ivan Towers. He invented Flipper and Gentle Ben. Remember those shows?
Yes.
That Ivan. Well, think about it. Look up this guy's name. I think it's Ivan Towers. But the point is what kind of name is Towers and what kind of name is Ivan? There's a bunch of Hungarians who came here and wrote.
Just storytellers.
Yeah.
Who wrote. And you know what's interesting is that was an era of television when the stories were very sort of fairy tale-ish, childlike.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what he did. So I have no doubt. Hey, Jack, plus he was Jewish, so an extra it's like a storyteller on nitrous oxide. Pow.
Jake.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's going on?
So, just quick plug. I've listened to you guys for a long time. Keep up the good work. I'm not going to kiss your ass like everybody else does.
But how crazy is it that you can listen to us in Hungary and talk to us from Hungary? That's just my dad would freak out if he heard.
It's absolutely crazy. Yeah. I listen to the podcast and I also download old Love Line episodes when I'm on the train. So I get a lot of
the train. That's right. Yeah, the train. Hey, you can go to Amazon and pre-order my book, President Me.
I did all that.
Thank
before you.
You.
Got here.
Well,
you should know.
Thank you, buddy. All right, what's going on?
So just a caveat to you guys talk about how intelligent Hungarians are. A lot of them are, but this quick little story is unfortunately one about one who isn't so bright. the girl that cuts my hair, used to cut my hair, I'm full-time living in Budapest, I'm in Győr now, but anyway, very, very attractive. We start talking, she speaks a little bit of English, speaks a little bit of Hungarian. One thing led to another, we started a little relationship, and she's the sweetest girl. She's dumber than a bag of hammers, though. But it's kind of one of those deals where, I know I'm eventually going to be getting out of here. I'm going to ride this out. You know, she's no fun intended. She's great. I've always kind of said that, you get a visa. You know, if you get your visa, then you will come to America with me, and, we'll have a great life in America. Never anticipating that this hairdresser would ever actually get a visa to come to America. About last week, I get a call elated from my girlfriend, I guess you could say. She got a visa. I'm supposed to go back to the United States in the end of March. She wants to come back with me.
Mm.
Unfortunately, I don't really want a relationship with this girl in the United States.
How? Let me ask you about living in a place like Hungary. Other than, obviously, it's not your language, your culture, but could you live there for an extended period of time? I mean,
Budapest?
I feel like
absolutely.
There's a lot of perks. I feel like, for instance, I feel like Los Angeles is turning into a piece of shit, for instance. Is a piece of shit. Budapest sounds beautiful. Sounds like...
Oh, it's amazing. And the good thing about Budapest is that you can get around. Almost everyone speaks English anywhere you would want to go. It's a beautiful place. Low cost of living.
Is so, it clean?
Just like any city, there are crappy parts, there are nice parts, but where I live on my American salary, which isn't that much by American standards, I have a nice apartment in a nice area.
And
you can live well.
How about eating Hungarian food? I love that Hungarian food.
Goulash for days, man, especially in this winter.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you're girly. You don't want... You're just not that into her.
I mean, I'm into her in a physical sense, but... All right, well, there's one more thing. The problem is her asshole is the size of a mason.
Oh, wow. Well done, Jake. Well done.
Oh, my God. Guys, I've been listening to old Loveline episodes for so long. I've been thinking, God, I wish Loveline was still on so I could get like a good asshole mason jar.
I actually was having like an emotional reaction to it. I was feeling bad for this girl. I was like, oh, this is awful.
That's good, Jake.
Jake, that's a top three. Top five, for sure. Well done. Mm-hmm. Are you actually hungry? Are you actually hungry? That's my question. Yeah.
Not anymore. I did actually live there for about a year and a half. Though,
so oh, pretty specific stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the bogus, the holy grail of bogus calls is if you can get, she has an asshole the size of a mason jar.
If you can get to that point. But if you can get to it, but have us completely engaged.
Don't have us falling off.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've been a fan for a long time, guys. Hey, actually, I do have a real question. Can I ask?
Jake, of course, you've earned, yes, hats off to you, sir. Huzzah. But okay. Did you ever hear the girl that did the smoke alarm, Lord Sarah?
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of YouTube videos where it's like people put together like memorable things from Loveline, and there was, I did listen to that.
That's
one,
still number one. That's still number one.
What is number one?
Yeah.
Well, it's where this girl called in and she had a smoke alarm chirping in the background.
Right.
I don't even remember the call engaged
us. Right?
Yeah, it was a recording. There was no smoke alarm. But we completely started focusing on it. And don't you understand what kind of a lizard are you? Kind of a reptile that you haven't changed the battery on this thing. And she had a very elaborate call. I can't remember what the content was, but we bought the call too.
Right.
And we did a good 6 minutes on it, I think.
Yeah.
Or gullible. Until the mason jar appeared.
Nice job, Jake. All right, so what's your question?
Real question is, what is I don't know the answer to this, but I just need the great Dr. Drew to tell me. What is the probability of pregnancy occurring when there is a pill taken 100% correctly by my girlfriend? If they're pretty much pulling out versus finishing internally. Is there any difference? She said it makes her nervous. She doesn't want to. Is there any difference in that?
No one's ever got that number. There probably is some difference, but it's already with the pill. It's like 0.0004%, you know, failure rate. It's like it's you go put your money on the lottery, you're more likely to win something.
Well, plus, if that kid defines the odds or defies the odds, that kid is the golden child.
He's the Messiah.
Do the math.
So you want to have the Messiah, right?
Well, either you don't or you do.
Well, I'm saying if it is the Messiah, you've got to see that through.
That's what I'm saying, right.
If so you meant you were
it'll
chosen.
It'll probably work, and if it doesn't, you have a child that can, you know, defy science, and that's we need them on this planet. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we need
more of them. Chris?
Yeah, what's up?
What's going on?
Hey, nothing. I wanted to ask you guys a quick little question. I've been listening to you guys like crazy. I started commuting 2 hours a day, about 170 miles. I got my MBA 6 months ago, and I started working for my parents. And
by the way, God bless you for averaging 85 miles an hour.
Yeah, and it's all hills, so it's doing wonders on my vehicle. So.
And the roads around Syracuse are brutal. Like,
wow,
they're two-lane highways and stuff.
Yeah.
What's the work? What do they do? Why did you? I'm confused.
Yeah. Well, my parents have owned a tent rental company, so I've been doing tents, tables, and chairs like every summer when I was growing up, and my parents raised us, you know, knowing that, you know, you have to work hard and the hours aren't Monday through Friday. Sometimes you have to work 16 hours on Saturday.
It just seems peculiar to me that there's a party rental service of sufficient magnitude to need an MBA to run it 2 hours outside of Syracuse. Does that sound farmlands?
Now, we're talking about tent rentals for, like, big outdoor auctions, not pup tents.
Right. Yeah. Well, like, our biggest client is like Syracuse University. We do a lot of like all the graduations. My parents do really well. They've owned it for 10 years. They have a house in Syracuse and a house in Florida. And so I see that they do well, and I've grown up a great life, but they've also taught me to work hard. So I've been working hand in hand with, you know, guys who have ninth grade educations and things like that. Well, I just finished my MBA, and
hold on.
This is something.
Are those guys in the seventh grade? Because then they're doing pretty good. No,
that would be good. No, they just, you know, they quit school when they were in tenth grade, and some of them are managers, and they bust their ass. But you know, long story short, I'm driving 2 hours a day to be here because I feel like this might be worthwhile in the future if I decided to take it over. But right now, I'm not making a lot of money, and it's just kind of like enough to pay my bills and things like that. There's not.
All right, but what's the question?
What is the question exactly?
The question is, do I stick around making like half of the amount of money that I could with an MBA? I could go somewhere else.
I would take over their business.
Yeah, but I would feel very strongly he should not, because he's now seen the innards of this company done and done. Now he should go apply his craft elsewhere and develop skills and see other companies and see what is what he wants to do. And when the day should come that he does decide to take over that company, if he does, he'll come with a diversified experience in other businesses to bring to the pup tent company.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
And
he's unhappy doing this. Go work somewhere else.
Well, a couple things. First off, I think, tents, who cares? You know, by the way, 9 out of 10 jobs are who cares? You know, your dad makes laminates. Yeah. Your dad works at a mill that makes flooring or something. You know what I mean? It's all, you know, not everything's astronaut. But you realize the business of business can be interesting to a guy with an MBA.
Yeah.
It's not so much. For me, I'm selling Mangria, which is fun, but if I was selling tents, it would still be fun because I would try to figure out the best, most efficient way to corner that market, move the product, maximize the profits, all the things they teach in business school. So I used to sort of sit around and think, like an artist, where you sit around and you go, well, what's so exciting about unfinished furniture? Or tents, or making big vinyl banners that hang outside of buildings saying that the marathon's coming next week or something like that. And then you realize, oh, that's not what they're into. That's not what excites them. What excites them is profit and growth and growing the company, essentially. So
creating jobs.
Yeah, I realize there's something in it then for everybody, no matter what they're doing, because they're in the business of business, and it just happens to be tents that they got assigned
to. But the way he's described this, he's not in the management. He's in the grunt level stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And his parents want him to work and all that kind of stuff.
So what do you think?
I think he can always get back to it.
Right.
Like
and bring a diverse experience back. Go apply your MBA somewhere else. And you're not happy. So do something that makes you happy.
Right. Okay.
All right.
That's right. Our pleasure. All right, quick break. Right back after this.
Hi, I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week, on This Week with Larry Miller, I will tell you about My Fair Lady, one of the greatest movies ever made, and I'll tell you why it's great and why it's great to fall in love. Listen for free through iTunes or go to LarryMillerPodcast.com. We'll see you here.
Yeah, we're back. Oh, I did a big photo shoot and a bunch of promos for this new TV show I'm doing.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable.
Well, you've always been so good at that. Reading somebody else's copy, doing promotion. We're promotional machines, you and I.
It wasn't that bad.
I hate that shit.
Yeah, I know. It's so weird. It is. It's this business, I realize, is great if you're a chick and possibly gay. It sucks.
A gay chick?
Or a gay chick. No, I mean a guy. There's a lot of guys, mostly gay. Hate to stereotype, but here I go. They're into it. They're into it. Like I would go, I'm going to go do the Celebrity Apprentice. And my gay publicist would be like, oh my God, we got you all these free clothes and all these shoes, you know, and I'd be like, you know, but when Matt D'Andrea says, we talked to the guys at Royal Purple or Joe Gibbs Oil, and they're giving you the synthetic with the high zinc compound in it, a case of it, I'm excited.
Yeah.
That's what I'm into. No, what I'm saying is I'm not into makeup. I'm not into hair.
Shoes.
I'm not into shoes. No. I'm not into clothes. If you're into this business, it's kind of fun. You get to dress up. At this moment, I'm wearing the shirt, thankfully. You'll see it when you see the promo, and it'll be funny. Probably be down the road a few weeks, but delayed joke, but I came walking into the place, you know, half hour late because they always pad, put too much time for hair and makeup in there, and my hair and my makeup just doesn't take that long, so I deduct the half hour for them.
Yeah.
And I came walking in, and I knew it was going to be hair, makeup, wardrobe, photos, promos, blah, 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 online content.
This is today?
This is yesterday. Oh. And so I did a thing where I went, well, I'm going to wear my dark jeans because I know they always want the dark jeans. And I'll just wear my black tennis shoes because they're not going to fill my feet anyway. And then that way I can just swap shirts. First order of business is
efficiency.
How can we get through this without me having to take my shoes and pants off?
Yeah.
To me, that's an extra 90 seconds I don't want to deal with. Yeah. So I will always wear the jeans and shoes that is as close to approximate what they want.
Yeah.
So I came walking into my black shoes and my dark jeans, and they sort of had a pair of jeans and shoes for me, and they sort of looked down and they looked at me and they were reasonable. And they went, okay. And then they said, well, we got your shirt. And the shirt was this shirt exactly.
Yeah.
It's the exact same shirt I was wearing.
Yeah.
I tried to approximate that too.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, geez, you're wearing, I mean, if it's not the same shirt, it's almost exactly the same shirt. And they said, I'll just change it because this one's ironed.
Yeah.
And I just changed the shirt. And to me, it was a hassle. Like I said,
it's a hassle, but it's interesting that it's somewhat of a triumph on part of the. Normally, they try to have you hold a big red telephone or some bullshit. I consider it remarkable that they were able to put a shirt together that was you and you liked.
It's stunning. It didn't even matter if I liked it.
But it's just stunning. But you know what I mean? It's just
now, the thing that
usually
was stunning,
they'll hand you a lime green Lacoste shirt. Here you go, Adam. This is your work shirt for the day.
The thing that was stunning, or whatever. Is the network, which is run by a woman.
Which network is it?
Spike. It's run by a woman, Sharon Levy, always has some fashion thoughts.
How crazy is it? Sharon, you've been with Sharon a long time.
Yeah. We met her during the
Loveline.
Loveline, yeah. I like Sharon. Sharon has a fashion sense.
Yeah.
That's the only part about her I don't like. I would show up to shoot these contractor show episodes. I'd be wearing my jeans and my shoes, and I'd go, let's just swap the shirts and we'll shoot. You know, you have to swap the shirts because you shoot one episode and then you go, oh, this is day three of the second episode, so we need to put you back into this other shirt. You know, you're going to swap shirts.
Yeah.
But Sharon's thing was dark jeans.
Okay.
He's got to be wearing dark jeans. And I'm like, who gives a fuck about the jeans? And they go, dark jeans, that's what they want. That's what the network wants, dark jeans. And I was like, all right. The jeans I was wearing were more the color you're wearing, but not what you would call dark jeans.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm fucking working on a job site. I'm wearing jeans. Specific note, it's one of those season one things, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You get to season three, it's like, tell them to fuck themselves with the jeans.
Yeah, yeah.
But season one, you know, they really want the dark jeans. Okay. Put the dark jeans. Got the dark jeans note 26 times. Show up yesterday to do the promos and the photo shoot. I'm wearing the dark jeans because I knew I was going to get the dark jeans joke. Get the stonewashed, like faded light jeans waiting for me. And this is the network promo shoot.
Yeah.
I said, what's with the light jeans? This is the jeans they laid out. This is what they want. And I just went, no fucking way. I only go around the retard block once. We already went around the retard block once with the light jeans, dark jeans. Now you want to fucking do a second lap the other direction around the retard block. I'm not doing it. By the way, nobody. If I put the fucking light jeans on, they'd go wear the dark jeans. If I put the dark jeans on, they'd go wear the light jeans.
You guys know Adam's a dream to work with.
I make your life easier if you just shut the fuck up because no one really gives.
Life is so easy.
That's the grouper faces.
I will
over
tell
there.
You what people give a shit about and what people don't give a shit about. Gene Hugh is not something they give a shit about. Yeah. So I said, leave the thing on. But we swapped the shirts out.
All right.
And it was a good promo.
Somebody sent me a personality profile that fit yours. It was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think they Twittered it to me. There's something called the Big Four, the Big Five or something, which is I've never found it to be useful at all in terms of my work. But It's sort of four or five characteristic qualities of personality that they find are universal, like coldness versus warmth, introversion versus extroversion, mm-hmm. this sort of thing. And if I could find this thing, I'm going to read you the personality profile of this sort of rare type.
I will take this moment to reiterate that I'm going to be playing tonight, Motor City Casino in Detroit. So come on out and say hi. All right, you look for that. You want me to take a phone call?
No, I got it. It's the Myers-Briggs description. It's the ISTP. Excels at analyzing situations, gets to the heart of the problem swiftly, implement repairs, making them suited for engineering and mechanics. Naturally quiet, interested in understanding how systems operate. Contrary to their seemingly detached natures, they're often humorous, very insightful, observations about the world, abhor wasted time, enjoy exploring new things, become bored with repetitiveness and routine, things always have to be new and different, mm-hmm. the improv stuff. Mm-hmm. Closet daredevils who gravitate towards fast-moving hobbies, race car driving, specifically race car driving. They sometimes seem to act without regard for procedure, direction, protocol, even their own safety. That's not really you so much. It's all based on a broad stroke.
Oh, no. I do a lot of climbing up ladders and getting on shit without harnesses.
Well, you'll know why. It's
like
based
that.
On a broad store of knowledge through action and keen observation. Self-sufficient.
Well, let me jump in. Sorry.
Yeah.
If I see a ladder and the ladder says rated for 300 pounds and we're going to go up it with something that's 400 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody says, it's rated for 300. I go, rated for 300 means it won't break to 600.
Yeah.
It's an insurance thing.
Right.
If it broke at 301 pounds, there'd be lawsuits. The company would be out of business. So I observe what that is. So I'm not taking a chance, but it sounds like I'm taking a chance.
Allow others to live by their own rules so long as the favor is reciprocated.
Mm.
Interesting.
Well, what is that? Let's apply that to me.
You want to live by your own rules.
Right.
And you'll allow others to do the same.
Yes.
That's all. As long as they allow you to do the same. Mm-hmm. They are careful that not to cause offense because of seeming aloofness.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
There was another thing here about not suffering fools gladly. Like really have trouble with other people not living up to – I don't see it in here right now. It doesn't come jump out at me. But they want others to live up to their standards.
Well, like I said, have when you failed at something miserably, have the words "I tried my best" ever passed your lips?
You asking me?
Yes. I've never said I tried my best at anything that I failed at.
No, I don't say things like that.
I don't know any successful person that does.
Yeah.
That's sort of weird
to me. It's funny. I've never thought about it. It's a weird...
I think you see a lot of people.
It goes in the same quarter. It's on the same category as, well, I didn't lie. I told the truth. It goes in the same box for me. It's like I did something shitty, but I told the truth about it.
Yeah.
Same thing as I tried my best. Like, no, you failed. Whatever. Who cares if you tried your best?
Well, or maybe that is your best, but I'm staring at a bunch of broken eggs on
right,
the ground, and you got to go. That's my only thing.
So it's introversion, sensing, thinking, perception. If you're interested, the Myers-Briggs type. It's an unusual.
Yeah, no, I'm with. That's me.
Yeah.
I don't like wasting time. The reason I don't like wasting time is I'm a fucking atheist. And we're not going to be on this planet forever. I don't get the retarded procedures of just, yes, it bothers me.
Yeah.
There are things that are necessary, and then what it is I'll be fine if you explain to me why we have to do this thing.
But it better have a good reason. Are you happy with the show? Did it turn out okay?
I haven't seen it. It seems like it'll be good, but I'm not.
No, that doesn't sound like you because you're too busy with other stuff.
No, I'm done. I'm done caring in that department.
Why? They burn you out or?
If I'm not going to go sit in an edit bay. If I go sit in an edit bay and get a bunch of retarded notes from the network, I'll fucking throw myself off a cliff. So I'm not even getting to that point
but usually you have to talk to
the network.
Usually you have a good sense of the product. I remember the last time you did that show when you redid your dad's house,
mm-hmm.
you were complaining.
Well, I always complain.
But you were not happy with sort of where they took it and stuff. And
no, the product was good on that show. The network has a lot of retarded notes. They always have retarded notes. I disagree with the retarded notes, but it's their network, and I'm not going to do battle with them. The Man Show came out the way the Man Show did because we kicked the producers off the lot and we didn't listen to the network very often. And that was just Jimmy and I doing what Jimmy and I do. But that meant me sitting in the edit bay for six, right, 7 hours a day, just sitting in a dark edit bay, combing over every single bit. There's nothing on the Man Show. There was no commercial parody, no Man on the Street bit, no bit that we ever did that I didn't, or Jimmy didn't, sit in the edit bay. I would oftentimes kind of became the guy with the keen eye who would sit in the bay. Jimmy'd be in the office writing new episodes, and I'd be combing through these things, like, frame by frame. And that's why you take a look at the, you know, Masculine Out or whatever the parody is. I don't know which.
Heavenly Ever After, whatever the one is.
Yeah. those bits are tight and well done, and they were nowhere near that shape before we sat in the bay. I'm not going to go sit in the bay. Mm. I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
So it'll come out to be a good show. Okay. Will it be as good as it would be if I was sitting in the bay? No, I don't have that time. And I'm sure it'll be good because the content is good. The people who are working on it are good. But I've detached myself from the part where I'm going to go sit in the bay. And it's not my show. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right. But that was a very interesting observation, or a very interesting assessment,
yeah,
of me. And, you know, it's...
Well, no one is unique. You know what I mean? No one's completely unique. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's got to be some construct out there that you fit into.
Well, I retweeted something that I think Winston Churchill said, and maybe Gary can find it. But this is what happens with me. This is right. You should talk to Lynette about this, you know.
I'll be sure to. Sure.
I did it this morning, Gary, so you can probably find it. But what I'm saying is I have these conversations with people, oftentimes my wife, where I go, you know, Molly's shitting up the backyard, you know, and she'll go, I went online and I looked for ways to figure out how to get Molly, what is this Winston Churchill quote?
What is it?
Go ahead.
We read it.
Yes. What is it?
No,
it's a quote of some sort.
It is not. It is no use saying, quote, "We are doing our best," unquote. This is all Churchill. You have got to succeed in doing what is necessary.
Right. So I have conversations/arguments with my wife and others where they go, hey, I went online, I looked for ways to get the dog to quit shitting in the backyard, and then I went down to the pet store and I got this shit away and I sprinkled it around the perimeter of the thing, and then I talked to your boy Rob about putting up a fence for the dog run, and all I say is, right, but it's been 3 months and I stepped in shit yesterday. And they go, yeah, but I went online. And I went down to the pet store, and I went, and I'm like, right.
We've got to succeed in doing what is necessary.
But all, I just said to, you know what I said to Lynette, but I said this to everybody. I spent 3 months trying to get fucking Tom Cruise to sit down for an interview with me for this motherfucking Paul Newman Racing documentary. I talked to John Krasinski, who said he knew him, and he could get a thing to him, and he could, you know, help me. And almost guaranteed he could get him because they were close friends. And I sent a thing out to him and a sizzle reel. And the sizzle reel, you know, but he sort of sent back politely, well, you know, Tom could be out of the country. I don't know, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't rude about it, but it didn't happen. Then we sent one out for Tom Cruise and out to the universe and made a sizzle reel for Tom. And then we sent one to Tom's people. And we sent pictures of Tom back in the day driving with Newman. And we sent little interview clips. And we sent, and eventually we got Robert Redford. And we sent them the Robert, hey, good enough for Robert Redford, good enough for Tom Cruise. We cut together four different sizzle reels, sent out 25 different emails, and made 15 phone calls. And at the end of 3 months, a lot of effort and what would be a certain a dollar amount. I don't know what it is. We don't get Tom Cruise. So it is the exact same as us doing zero. It's the exact same as me. The result is exactly the same as me never being born.
Yeah.
In terms of me sitting down with Tom Cruise or Tom Cruise never being born, right. Or both of us never being born. That is the result.
Yeah.
The result is not, well, after all that effort, we got 10% of Tom Cruise in this. We have 0%, which is the same we would have had for the documentary Max Pat is making about nothing.
Mm-hmm.
No Tom Cruise.
He's not making about nothing.
All right. So he's not making about nothing. Right. What's the point? Well, you got to fucking try as hard as you can. Sometimes you get nothing. Other times you make a few phone calls, a few emails, a few back and forths, and you sit down with Robert Redford in Manhattan.
But I think the assumption here, though, is that you always do the best you can. You don't have to announce you did the best you could because you assume you do the best you could.
I know I'm flying in the face of my Tom Cruise story when I say the arguments I get into people with is I did this, I did that, I did the other. And then my argument is, yes, I'm cleaning the shit out of my shoe right now.
Yeah.
Which is to say,
so,
I don't care all the things that
I know you don't care.
No, but, I do care. I like it.
Yeah.
But it has to end.
But the question is then, should you just go, is what if you were to say, I've exhausted, just like you did with Tom Cruise, and the dog's going to be shitting on the grass. I'm sorry. I did my best. I've exhausted every avenue, and I'm frustrated as you are.
That unfortunately, there's a little apples to oranges because there's nothing I can do to get hold of Tom Cruise inside of the law anymore. I've tried his publicist. I've tried his friends. I've reached out to the universe. I've tried everyone who knows him or might know him.
Said, let me turn around. They go,
If your kid said, I've tried everything, I can't do a book report,
Depends how far you are. We can go shoot the dog and take care of it. But here's the deal.
I'm listening. So, go ahead.
But would it be okay to go, I've exhausted everything? If you would like a list of all, believe me, I did everything. You got any ideas? I'll be happy to do that. But, you know,
that's fine. Okay. All I want is to end this problem.
Yeah. So, got any suggestions? I'm happy.
I don't want to be the one to keep bringing it up, is what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. In my world, the way I'm wired is I'm getting on a plane and going to Detroit. You handle this. That'll be our deal.
All right.
That's how I work. And yes, there's certain things that just they're out of your hands. I'm not saying that if I took my buddy and maybe I should Daniel Kellison and put him on Tom Cruise that he couldn't get him. I am out of resources.
Yeah, you couldn't do it.
I could not accomplish this. And we went through as many machinations as we possibly could with including his publicists on multiple go rounds.
Would it be it's always an interesting thing to me is how about approaching the problem differently? You know what I mean? How about I put somebody on cleanup detail and you'll never see the shit?
The problem with cleanup detail is Molly just is a shitting machine. No matter how many times somebody said they went out there and picked up, it was always fresh shit back there. And it was always just stepping in it or driving
the
car
over it.
I'm just
saying, maybe there's a different way to solve the problem.
No, we put a fence. My guy Rob and me and him Saturday morning put a fence up. And
that's that.
I am saying that there's fairly easy ways to approach most things. And what I want to do because of my efficiency issue is to
take it off the list.
I don't want to have multiple conversations about things that are threes and under. Now, Tom Cruise, unfortunately, we have to have multiple conversations about because he's one of the biggest stars in the world and because he would add a lot to this project.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where to put your keys, where's the leash, where's the Molly's leash to walk the dog? You know, that kind of stuff falls under the heading of we're wasting everyone's time, including yours or whoever you're talking to it about.
Yeah.
That's an interesting topic, which is, Drew, dig this.
Dig.
I am very aware as an atheist that we have a very finite amount of time to be on this planet, to accomplish things, yeah. and to live our lives. Mm-hmm. People approach their life in a very casual way. You know, they say, oh, over the course of a lifetime, you'll spend 2 years looking for things. Keys, wallets, cell phones.
You want that back.
Well, to me, as an yeah. atheist with the finite amount of time,
yeah.
that seems like an incredible waste of
two
very precious years. I bet you wish you had that at the end of your life, you know? Where's the leash to walk the dog? I don't know. Maybe it's I took it off in the kitchen. Maybe it's in the kitchen. Let's go look in the kitchen. Maybe the nanny took it and left it in the, you know, and I'm the guy putting the hook up on the inside of the entry hall closet going, it goes here every time because I don't want to spend 10 seconds looking for it. But I don't want anyone else to spend 10 seconds looking for it. Here's the notion. Is this super, super duper casual way that most folks have for approaching life a way of denying the...
It's not a way of denying. It belies a denial.
Okay. It belies a denial of their own mortality.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man, I got...
I was just thinking...
I can look for this leash forever.
But I was just thinking that...
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
does
I agree.
It make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes sense to me, but I was
well,
just
what
thinking...
Well, what do you mean? Because it is kind of complex. It's not like somebody...
No, Listen, I'm like you, though, a little bit. I'm such a codependent, I'll just go do it, but I have the same feelings about things, which is my life is too short to be spent... I feel that way about certain movies. I feel that way about certain conversations. I feel that way about a lot of things. Like life
right.
is precious, and I want to use every minute and maximize it and not waste.
Right.
Now, I was just thinking as you were saying that, though, but other like Buddhists have addressed this issue in their philosophy, and they would say—
Where they put their dog leash.
You fully engage in dog leash finding. You must fully be fully present and involved in
finding. I dig that, but I think a higher-ranking Buddhist, Colonel Buddhist, would decree that a special
Colonel Buddha,
a special hook made of platinum be put upon the door of the Gohanzit or whatever they live in. I don't know what the Buddhists live in. The dojo that the Buddhists live in. In the front door, and all leashes from this day forth shall be hung upon the sacred hook so that the Buddhists don't have to wear out their sandals walking in a fucking circle around the dojo looking for the leash.
Agreed.
And that they should have those kinds of inward thoughts while taking the dog on a walk, not while walking in a circle through the dojo.
I don't disagree.
Okay.
Wait, do that again. That was worthy of two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in. We do appreciate it. And again, the PayPal and the Amazon, it all just helps. And, of course, go to Meeting Baby. That's right. Winter weather. It's impacting your business. Some of those Buddhists have to double up on the robes.
Socks under their sandals.
Socks under the sandals, but with the toe cut out, the one big toe.
Yeah, of course.
They never commit to all the toes, just to one.
Yeah, the toenail breaks
just
it through.
Just the one toe. Yep. Flights are delayed. People get sick. Go to Meeting with HD Faces, brought to you by Citrix. You can meet and collaborate online. No matter what the weather's like, just go to Meeting. You hop on the computer, your mobile device, you launch your meeting, your first meeting, and do it in seconds. Share the screen, collaborate, and you can try it for free. 30 days free. Visit gotomeeting.com. Click on the try it free button. Use the promo code Adam. That's gotomeeting.com. Promo code Adam. Meeting is believing. And until next time, this is Adam Kroll for Dr. Drew, Chris Maxipata, and Gary Hafter saying mahalo.
This is Corolla Digital.